Welcome to New York Zen Center for Contemplative Care's podcast. This free podcast is made possible through your generosity. Please consider making a donation through our Ways to Give link on zencare.org.
Good morning. Good morning. Listen, if you're only going to get to speak once a day, you may as well make the most of it. Right? The Tathagata's true meaning, teachings of the Buddha. So this is our second full day of session, and it's wonderful to see so many of you who've just fallen into that deep stillness, which is what Sesshin is about. Some of you may have been duped into coming. You might be thinking, what the hell am I doing here? I thought this was a weekend of R&R on the Hudson, overlooking West Point. Nah. If the experience you're having is different to the one you were expecting, I invite you to simply be with it and watch everything as it arises, noticing preferences, judgments, resentments. The person next to me is fidgeting too much. The person in front of me is falling asleep. Where is that person that was here 5 minutes ago or in the last sitting? How come I have to stay here and they don't? And all those questions we ask ourselves, clearly they're just beginners. Or I prefer the practice I usually do. I like the other retreat centers I've been on. And I like my other teachers better. I can understand what they're saying. All this Zen stuff is making no sense to me. I think I'll get a cab. I'll call Uber. On my forbidden cell phone. Get here right now. I don't care how much it costs to get back to the city, just get me an Uber. And you could do that. But what an opportunity you'd be missing. The opportunity to notice just how much your thoughts separate you from actually being here. How your thoughts keep you from thoroughly investigating the substance of, or heaven forbid, the existence of your inner life. We're reading the Platform Sutra during this 90-day period. So, if you've thoroughly enjoyed this weekend, pick up a copy of the Platform Sutra. It's about this thick. It's not that difficult to read. The fifth patriarch, Hung Jen, asked Hui Neng, "Where are you from? Why do you come to this mountain to make obeisance to me? Just what is it you're looking for from me?" And Hui Neng replied, "I am from Lingnan, a commoner from Xingqiao. I have come this long distance only to make obeisance to you. I am seeking no particular thing, but only Buddha Dharma." The master replied, "If you're from Lingnan, then you're a barbarian. How can you become a Buddha? If you're from Long Island, if you're from New Jersey, you're a barbarian. How can you find Buddha nature?" That's basically what he's saying to this man. "Oh, you're from the south. You know, all the elite, all the temples were in the north. But he's from the south. He's obviously some farmer or something. How can you become Buddha?" Wei Neng replied, "Although people from the south and people from the north differ, there is no north and south in Buddha nature. Although my barbarian's body and your body are not the same," we'll just wait for the cell phone to finish and then we'll carry on. "Although my barbarian's body and your body are not the same, what difference is there in Buddha nature, in our Buddha nature? When you're separating me from you, you're saying that our Buddha nature is different. It doesn't matter where you're from, gender, color, ethnicity. We all have Buddha nature." So this is the third day of our commit to sit, our 90-day practice of sitting each morning or some point during the day for however long you can commit to, 5 minutes, an hour, half an hour. We have almost 200 people signed up to sit with us each morning. So wherever you do it, in the office, at home, you're sharing it with a whole host of other people who have also committed to stop, to notice. Each morning there's a reflection sent out. Thank you to Jushin and Koshin for selecting these selections from the Platform Sutra. And today's reflection is, consider the ways in which you differentiate yourself from others by making distinctions in appearance, gender, sexuality, race, and ethnicity. That's probably not in the Platform Sutra. How do you shade your eyes from the Buddha nature of others? Consider the ways in which you differentiate yourself from others by making distinctions in appearance. So interesting, I used to have a whole perception of people that had nose rings and piercings. And some of the smartest people I've met have nose rings and piercings. But originally it was like, ew. You know, no respect for their bodies, all sorts of stories, yada, yada, yada. Because their appearance was different. And I remember as a 19, 20-year-old with platform shoes and, you know, spiky hair and different colors in it, thinking that, yeah, I'm the bee's knees. And I wonder what other people thought about me at that time. The story of Wei Ning is actually really inspiring. His absolute determination to practice, no matter what, it was the most important thing in his life. So think about this poor kid raised in poverty, selling firewood to survive. Think of him entering this temple, this great temple, and eventually becoming a teacher. This poor kid from the inner city, right? From wherever your inner city is, either geographically or metaphorically. Where's your inner city that keeps you at a distance? Where you've heard that you're not as good as, or you're different from, that prevents you from taking that journey to whatever temple it is. We can see Hui Neng's understanding of Buddha nature from his first encounter with the fifth patriarch, when he responds, although people from the south and people from the north differ, there is no north and south in Buddha nature. There's no difference between you and I. So the story of Hui Neng goes something like this. This is the short version. One day the fifth patriarch called his disciples and asked them to write a verse on their understanding of the Buddha Dharma. And the head monk, Shen Su, wrote this verse. The body is the Bodhi tree. The mind is like a clear mirror. At all times, we must strive to polish it and must not let the dust collect. So, this verse was posted on the wall, one of the corridors of the temple. And one day, a novice monk was walking past the threshing room where Hui Neng was pounding the rice, this poor guy, you know, in his apron, covered in rice powder, just thrashing away. And he heard this young monk reciting this verse. And Hui Neng asked him, what is it you're reciting? And he replied, telling him of the fifth patriarch's instructions to all the monks to write a verse, to discern this cardinal matter, this Buddha nature. And Hui Neng didn't think too much of this verse. and went to the hall of the temple on which the verse was written. And by the way, Hui Neng couldn't read or write. He was illiterate at this point. And he asked someone to write his verse, which was in effect a contradiction to the verse that was on the wall, that the head monk had written. Devon has printed this two sides, which I'm not used to. Thank you, Devon, for getting me used to conserving paper. So this is the, again, let me remind you, this is the original verse. The body is the Bodhi tree. The mind is like a clear mirror. At all times we must strive to polish it and must not let the dust collect. So that's from the head monk of the temple. Hui Neng, his verse was, Bodhi original has no tree. The mirror has no stand. Buddha nature is always clean and pure. Where is there room for dust? Right? There's nothing to hang on to. There is no tree. We don't need to polish a mirror. Buddha nature is always clean and pure. We must not let the dust collect. Where is the room for dust in Buddha Dharma? So this went up on the wall, in one of the other corridors, the south corridor, it says. And the monks in the temple, the novices and all the monks, saw this verse and were absolutely amazed when they heard it and read it. And when they heard it was the words of the lowly rice thrasher, they were pretty astounded. And jealous and separating. And the fifth patriarch heard and saw this verse and realized in that moment that Hui Neng's understanding of Buddha nature was indeed splendid. So he wasn't interested in all this, you know, intellectual bullshit, you know, this up here idea of what the Dharma is. He was saying, it's just this. In each moment, Buddha nature is pure and clean. Shinryu Suzuki, or perhaps Maizumi, I can't remember quite now, used to say, you're perfect and complete just as you are. And you could do some work on yourself. But just as you are is perfect and complete. With all your stinky stuff. So the fifth patriarch chose Hui Neng to be his successor, to become the sixth patriarch. This poor kid from Detroit, Michigan, South LA. You know, this poor kid who was pumping gas for a living. Didn't go to college. Didn't get his PhD, just possessed this wonderful understanding of the Dharma. So the fifth patriarchs knew that the other monks in the temple would be really furious. So Hui Neng met him kind of in the middle of the night in secret. And the fifth patriarch gave Hui Neng the robe of the Buddha and the bowl, transmitting the Dharma to him. This secret ceremony. And Hui Neng had to escape in the middle of the night, run off into the dark, because he knew the other monks would try to attack him, possibly kill him. So jealous and angry they'd be. And if you want to find out what happened next, get yourself a copy of the Platform Sutra. It's like a soap opera. It's all very exciting. In this sutra, Wei Neng tells us, enlightenment and intuitive wisdom are from the outset possessed by men and women of this world themselves. It's just because the mind is deluded that they cannot attain awakening to themselves. Right? We all possess the possibility of awakening. It's just that we're so deluded. We think, I can't do that. I'm not smart enough. I'm not intellectual enough. It's too difficult. And get everything I need from Wheel of Fortune. Get all my knowledge. They're clever. Is that the one with the clues? It's just because the mind is deluded that they cannot attain awakening for themselves. They must seek a good teacher to show them how to see into their own nature. It doesn't matter where this teacher is, whether it's here or in Massachusetts or Los Angeles or at the end of the earth in not Long Island, no. Montauk. That's not the place I was thinking. I was thinking way up in Nova Scotia somewhere. It doesn't matter where you find your teacher, but find your teacher. It doesn't have to be Zen. It has to be what speaks to you. Diane's quote from yesterday by Farini, Paul Farini. Only one who knows and accepts his, herself, can find equality with another. All relationship endings can be attributed to a single cause, lack of fidelity to oneself. The moment that you begin to not trust yourself, not believe in yourself, again, separating yourself, either feeling like the barbarian or seeing the other as the barbarian, that's when the relationship ends, usually, because we're not on this equal footing anymore. Something happens, and that can happen in our marriage, in our friendships, and absolutely in a student-teacher relationship. hopefully your teacher will disappoint you, will make you angry, will make you want to run for the hills and never come back. That's when you have a choice. Do I stay or do I go? What's that song? Should I stay or should I go? What's that song? Anybody know what it is?
Clash.
The Clash. God, you must have worn platform shoes too. The Clash. No, that was after platform shoes, right? Yeah. I was disco, so I don't remember. I digress, sorry. I went straight back to the 70s for a second. So in interviews yesterday, I was so moved by those who came to see me, by their willingness to be open and honest about their wanting to understand and deepen their practice. Deepen their understanding of the Dharma and actually admitting that it's not easy. I want to do it, but I can't get it. You know, I sit and I get bored and I sit and I'm thinking, when's it going to happen? And I've been sitting for 3 years and I still feel the same shit. And it's like, great. Keep sitting, because it's not about sitting to find some beautiful rose garden at the end of it. It's about sitting to fully realize what this life of yours is about. As our teacher says, the Dharma is constantly arising. All we have to do is show up for it, right?
Easy to say.
Easy to say. Yeah. That's what I said when she first said it. Easy to say. I know it's not easy for us to look at our darker sides, our likes, our dislikes, our biases. And yet, how wonderful to acknowledge them and be unafraid to look at our shadows. Well, be a little afraid, maybe. But to do it nonetheless, to work on ourselves and our relationships to those around us and to those we've never met. How do we do that? Work on relationships with those we've never met. I'm not going to give you the answer. All prejudices of any kind, this too is from Diane yesterday, all prejudices of any kind bring feelings of separation from oneself and others. These perceptions are that which have created a world of inequality. You mentioned the armies in our head yesterday, all these soldiers, you know, planning and plotting and scheming. So I'd like to finish with a poem by Marie Howe. It's called Government. It's about separation. How we do that. Standing next to my old friend, I sense that his soldiers have retreated, and mine, they're resting their guns on their shoulders. Talking quietly, "I'm hungry," one says. "Cheeseburger," says another. And they all decide to go and find some dinner. But the next day, negotiating the two narrow aisles of the Health and Harmony food store, when I say "excuse me" to the woman and her cart of organic chicken and green grapes, she pulls her cart not quite far back enough for me to pass, and a small mob in me begins picking up the fruit to throw. So many kingdoms, and in each kingdom so many people, the disinherited son, the corrupt counselor, the courtesan, the fool, and so many gods arguing among themselves over toast, through lunch and salad. And on into the long hours of the mild spring afternoon, I'm the god. No, I'm the god. I'm the god. No, I'm the god. I can hardly hear myself over there muttering, "How can I discipline my own army? They're exhausted and want more money. How can I disarm when my enemy seems so intent?" What is, who is, where is your enemy that keeps you from this practice, this Dharma, these opportunities to wake up like this? For those of you who weren't awake, to wake up. Take the rest of this day to consider your practice. To consider, as Koshin said yesterday when we were talking about our evening chant, the evening gatha, how short this life is. Do not squander your life. Make the most of the rest of the time you have here, to be here. Don't start packing your suitcase, making arrangements to get out of here. Stay until you leave. Someone in this room had a very close brush with death this week. How fortunate they are to have survived that. And how fortunate they are to have experienced that. Such a teaching. How quickly. May your life go well.